Well, hello, and welcome to Mashing In. This is episode 10, La Decima, I believe it's called in Spain.
La Decima.
Yeah.
Wow. You're very worldly, you know.
I am. Yeah. I like world football, soccer, so yeah, they call it La Decima. Episode 10, I'm your host, Stefan Turcott, alongside...
Brian Tesselin.
And Edward Kay.
That's right. We like to start the show off. Maybe first I'll mention that we are kind of moving... into a bi-weekly airing.
We've gone pretty aggressive with the first 10, so yeah. I think now we're sort of tapering off and we're doing a bit more of a every 2 weeks.
Which is promoting drinking responsibly.
Yes. Yeah, it was hurting us.
And families, yeah.
Families are important. Okay. We are recording again at my house, so if you hear any... small children playing, that is it.
They are not drinking with us.
Nope.
So we like to start the show off with like some events that we either went to or upcoming beer events near and around us.
Uh-huh. So this week being CBC, Craft Brewers Conference, Colorado Springs, I believe it is.
No, it's in Denver.
Denver?
It's at the convention center. I've always wanted to go. I've never gone. I've run a couple breweries, but like we've never been in at that point yet.
Yeah.
But fingers crossed, Il Sauvage will be there next year. Sweet. And all three of us for sure will be going at least.
Oh, wow. That's wicked.
Yeah.
Because you have a new employee now.
We do. If that's...
Is that something
that's
you're
the
having?
New segment. No. Yeah. We're really happy to have Andrew with us. I can't wait. Yeah. And it's fun to finally have a full-time help. It's very good for us.
That's awesome.
Great.
Yeah.
Is he getting help with brewing or is he
a little bit? So because we're doing more packaging now. So we've got canning runs like every 2 weeks, which we can always use a couple of extra hands. And then we start bottling this like Friday.
Oh wow.
It's our first so it's a little bit easier because we're doing we're packaging still product and we're bottle conditioning it. So it's not as complicated as bottling carbonated product. But it still helps to have extra hands because you've got to
move quickly.
You got to move it all around. You got to put it in cases. You've got to lay it down. We're going to lay them on their sides to bottle condition. So it does take a little bit of manual labor. So he's going to help us front of house and a little bit in the back.
That's exciting.
Mm.
Good to hear.
Yeah. So you were just in Vancouver?
I was in Vancouver. I spent 4 days, three and a half technically, visiting some friends. One of them, which is opening a brewery right next to beer up in the North Shore there. We have Lower Lonsdale called House of Funk, which a lot of people may have heard of already. Fooder barrel aging facility. Going to be a coffee roastery too.
Really?
Yeah. They've got the espresso machine in and they've hired I don't know the name of it now. What do you call a coffee roaster if there's an actual...
I don't know. I know some because we share space with coffee roasters, but I don't know what they call that position.
I don't know what it is either. Something we should have probably answered on our coffee one, but whatever. so their facility is super dope. The brewing area is very small. Yeah. It's probably the same like square footage as what you have, but it's more compact and straight line down, like there's not very much room to walk where you have that little area to walk in around and whatnot. But he's got three fooders.
Yep.
Oh, sorry, four.
I saw them. They're the horizontal ones.
They're really long. And he's got two of them out right now. One's at Backcountry. One he did. I think the collab with Brewhall's done, and that's already like going. But he's got one more out, and I just can't remember where. Maybe Stealing Oak.
Cool. And I saw recently that they're like renaming that area of North Van, or that they're trying to get through that push through council. Rezoning it as like a brewery. What do they call it? The rail yards? Yeah.
Right.
Which is key because right now it's ridiculous the way you have to drink at beer. They can't get a lounge license because the municipality won't endorse it or like help them. So you have to just get the samples. Yeah. So like you get one beer broken up into.
They gave us two paddles when I were there.
Yeah.
I went and saw Matt too, and it was really nice to see them. And his beers are all like on point.
Oh, yeah. The hoppy stuff is fantastic.
He had this one called Splash Pants, and it was like a 9.3 double IPA with watermelon and something else.
Oh, I think I saw that.
And it did not taste, it tasted like cool, crisp watermelon juice. Like, it was beautiful, and it just like puts you on your butt. So
cool. So, events for coming up over the next week or 2 weeks. What do you got, Ed?
I'd say the big one coming up this weekend is the Okanagan Festival running Friday and Saturday.
Yeah,
it's quite popular and busy too.
It's pretty popular, yeah. On Friday as well, Friday night. Boombox is going to be celebrating their third anniversary at the, downstairs at 238 Kiefler, says, but sure to be fun. Yep. They've got a cool new logo going on.
I saw lots of new cool merch and stuff. Lots of new hats and shirts.
See their new tap handles?
Yeah, I saw that.
They're like, they're shaped like arcade games, and they're actually like, you can play arcade games on them.
No,
they're actually working, apparently. That's what they said.
Damn. It's pretty cool. And then for those who like fights, there's the BC Beer Wars. So brewers fighting each other.
Or that's people sponsored by a brewery fighting each other.
Well, that's also the preliminary
for people at work there.
Work for breweries, well.
That's the preliminary for Aprons for Gloves, though, isn't it?
What's that?
That's the preliminary for Aprons for Gloves, I believe, right?
I have no idea.
So then, and then Aprons for Gloves is a whole industry, food and beverage industry wide battle where they raise money for the Downtown East Side Boxing Boxing Club.
Right. Yeah, they're raising money for them, but the association. But this cask event, but that's sold out. Phillips is recently releasing their benefit brew on Monday.
And they just released the Hypoxia, right? For June 1st or June 2nd or something like
that? Yeah, but that's the day I come back, so I will not be going to that.
Okay. Not with that attitude.
Well, and we should quickly plug something. We have a beer dinner coming up.
And I.
At the Courtney Room.
At the Courtney Room on May 5th.
Yeah, there are still some seats. They are actually going very fast. I'm not just saying that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think we're half full.
Cool. That's really good to hear.
Just from the fact that, like, a lot of people who said they're already coming have already, like, booked their spaces and stuff. So we're getting close. We'll probably cap it at 34. If people really, really, really want to come, we could probably push it to close to 40, depending on, you know, what it is. But we have six different beers we're going to be tasting.
Six courses.
But we're also going to be, the first course is going to be hors d'oeuvres. So, and your first course, I've just confirmed now, we're actually going to be making the saison into a cocktail.
Okay.
So
cool. It's a good cocktail beer, I think.
It's a good cocktail. We do a cocktail beer with saison, so he's going to tie it into that one.
Cool.
And the date of this event?
May 5th. $95.
Well then. Okay.
Okay.
Slightly before that, a couple of other things.
Yeah, we're just saying now because the tickets are on sale now and they will go.
Buy them. Subliminal advertising.
Sure.
There's an Ontario tap takeover at Smith's coming up too. They got Bose, Bellwoods, Blood Brothers, Halcyon, which is really just Bose, so that's kind of cheating. But it's their Barrel House project, right?
It's very good stuff too.
Lots of good stuff coming in. That's kind of all the big events coming up before our next show.
Yeah, we'll probably touch on
a few things to keep us going.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we've got a little bit of beer news, and then we've got a secret beer ingredient tonight. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to stick around to hear what that secret ingredient is.
Because we're live.
Okay, welcome back. We're going to jump into our news segment now. The kind of article that I just wanted to briefly touch on today was that it came out this week that this was posted by the Chimanis Harvest House Society Food Bank in Chimanis, which is on the island here close to Victoria, and that Riot Brewing Company, I guess, has fallen on hard times, as I'm reading and quoting them. They struggled to make it through the shoulder season, but they come up a few weeks short. Essentially, they're looking for angel investors or even a community-owned type situation. Yeah. So it looks like they need...
They're kind of just off the beaten path there, eh? Like they,
that's to talk, but it looks like they need a quick cash injection just to meet payroll and rent and all the huge expenses that come with running a big business. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is the business side of brewing is that it's not all just... You know, crushing IPAs. It's like
Instagram. Yes.
Yeah, you've got to sell beer and manage growth, like you were kind of mentioning. I'm not sure what happened. From the outside, it looked like they tried to go pretty big pretty quickly.
They did, and I think they also had a few mishaps that kind of didn't help.
Yeah.
With like power outages and loss of product and
yeah,
and then I think they also just what's the word. they projected themselves higher than they thought they were going to make.
I think these days in BC, like, we have a behemoth in Vancouver. So it's the largest market, but it also has the most breweries.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's not like it used to be where you could open a brewery in Nelson and sell out all your product in Vancouver. Like, you kind of have to take care of your home
market
first. And unfortunately, Chemainus is quite a small market.
And the island is technically a small market too, with really the 2-3 juggernauts just taking over the mass.
Yeah, well, for tap, that's why, like, we're not even concerned with tap handles, because the tap handles are dominated by three big breweries down here in Victoria. So, like, you got to think more taking care of just your tasting room and stuff. But they have a tasting room, but they're also a large production facility as well. They bottle and can and
malt.
I was reading a bit on their backstory, and they had like a development company like build that building for them.
Yeah.
I think they had the mayor actually approach them at one point, saying he was their primary investor and wanting this to happen because he wanted to drive more people into Chemainus.
Yeah. Has anyone heard anything? I haven't heard anything. If they've been granted anything, or they've got a loan or an investor.
The weird thing as well is that they shared it and then briefly removed it. It's not, and they don't mention it anywhere on their Facebook.
The weird thing is that they, the Chemainus Harvest Host Society Food Bank has quoted them.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find it anywhere on their website or their Facebook or Instagram. So it's
a hard thing to kind of like come out and say, like, hey, we need help.
Yeah.
Right? You don't want people to go, well.
That's the awkward thing when you have, like, I don't know, what is it, maybe 15 to 20 employees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jobs on livelihoods on the line, as well as your own.
Well, they were also, like, they were trying to do things where they would have Souk Oceanside, like, contract brew out of there, too, so that would help a bit for renting.
But I've heard that Souk Oceanside now has their own space.
Yeah.
They finally have their own tanks and brew house, so I think that's about to dry up as well for them.
I don't think they were in there anyway. Yeah. I think it stopped a while ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe that was a while ago, but he was definitely using them for a bit to really pump out their cores and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because they were getting some good reach.
Mm-hmm. It's just a bit strange to see that, like, we've heard a lot about this from the States, but this is one of the first I've kind of heard from our local.
We've heard, they're probably one of the only ones we've heard lately that have been in trouble as much as.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's slowdowns, and then there's we need money. Money. Yeah.
But, and then there's some that just disappear.
Yeah.
Old Abbey. But then they came back. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's a business, right? So it's hard to. Who knows what happens, right? Yeah. They're very complex things. Okay. Anyway, that's probably enough about that.
Yeah.
Who wants to go next?
I can go next. Mine's talking about Craft Brewers Conference. And I guess today there was a talk going on growth in 2018 and how it's basically come to a stall. And basically there's only been a 4% growth happening, and
this is after double digits for the last like decade plus.
Yeah, it's been like 12, 13, 15, 17, 18, then dropped to 12, dropped to 6, and now it, from when it was 6 in 2016, it went to 4, and it plateaued at 4, and it's now evening out at 4% growth. They're saying it's not a blip, like, it's not just going to be that way for a while, like, it's not going to be that way this year and then go back up. It's like probably the next couple of years it'll be between 6 and 3.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's.
This is what happens when.
Oversaturation.
Yeah.
No, and
you reach plateau, right?
Like, it was a brand new market. Mm-hmm. So, craft beer was a market that didn't exist.
Super exciting.
So, of course, as it gains popularity, it grows, but as it gets to everyone knows about it, it has to correct itself.
Yeah.
Well, they're just saying out of the 1,049 breweries opened just in 2018, now they say 2,500 breweries are planned for the next, like, couple of years already. But, you know, there's already 219 brewery closures in 2018 as well. So,
well, that's not that surprising, considering there are 7,000, over 7,000 in the States now. 200 closings, like, is not.
That's at an all-time high, apparently, too.
For closings. But the number, with the thing that throws that off.
Yeah.
6 years ago, there were 3,000. There's now 7,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, of course, there's going to be some closing, because there's going to be some of those ones that, like, you know, refuse to change, or, you know, things like that. And they're going to get left behind with, as
And we don't really not see that part too much. Well, that's the thing, right? You don't see it too much in, like, in the forefront because we're just seeing more and more product come out all the time. You're like, well, how can this be slowing down? And it's like, well, it is slowing down.
Yeah.
And, like, as we can see with breweries, you know, they're just not making the cut because there's just too much product in the market now.
Yeah. So the other thing I think craft brewers has, well, not suffered, it's helped a lot of them greatly, is that banks are now more willing than ever to throw money at it.
Yeah.
So, like, it sounds great when the bank's like, here's $2 million, but, like,
we kind of want that back.
We need that back. Yeah. And if you don't give it, and if you don't meet these numbers, we're going to start taking your things.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So that it gets really dicey.
Well, just one thing I noticed here is I'm on the Brewbound website, and the articles that are on the side of this article, all the names are like, Stone Brewing unloads Berlin Brewery to BrewDog.
Yeah, that was a big thing this week that I also wanted to talk about, but yeah.
Last Call, Deschutes unlikely to build Virginia Brewery in 2021, but Trillium spends $13 million to acquire Canton Real Estate. So these are like, these are the things that are happening. Like, certain breweries are in massive growth and doing well, and, you know, it all depends what you're aspiring to be in that in the brewing world. And it's like a restaurant world too. What I constantly talk with restaurateurs and stuff like that about, you know, what are you aspiring to be? Are you aspiring to be like a local restaurant, like being super small and, you know, playing, and, or are you trying to be like a larger, high volume, you know, lots of heavy growth every year? And, you know, it's like, you can't be both. You know, you have to have a proper model. You can't shoot for the stars and that.
Yeah. The Stone one's really interesting, though, because, like, I don't know if you remember, like, it was a big story when they decided to open a production facility and brew pub in this historic building in Berlin. And, like, the CEO, Greg Koch, like, he was there with, like, a backhoe and a boulder, and he used it to crush, like, a bunch of old continental lager.
Oh.
And it was, like, Stone's coming to, like, destroy.
He's so arrogant.
I know.
Like, he's already gotten in trouble with that before, too.
I know. So, like, it's kind of funny that, and then he wrote this, like, I don't know. He wrote a big, an op-ed, like, with they sold, so they decided that they couldn't make a go of it. They weren't selling enough. So they decided to sell it to BrewDog, who's the big up and coming company, all like worldwide brewing company.
Yeah, every goddamn.
Yeah, and they keep opening pubs. Like every week, they open another pub in the UK.
Hotels and they're opening airliners.
So, but Greg Koch wrote an op-ed, and it was just kind of like, you know, the haters are going to say that, you know, that they saw this coming, but, like, you know, a broken clock's right twice a day, and it just felt like, should have just been like, sorry, man. Like, I was way too arrogant, way too cocky. Tried to change one of the oldest brewing tradition countries in the world. Like, I don't know. Surely, like, I just felt like it was a bit of a cop out.
Like, that's like a Brooklyn pizzeria walking into Italy and bulldozing over.
But you could do it. There are certain ways to do it. I think much, much smaller would have been much, much better. A small brew pub to start there would have killed it.
But that's what I mean. It's just like you're walking into like centuries of tradition. Yeah. Like, you don't have centuries of tradition in the US or in North America. Like, we don't have like
as long as it's someone not trying to like
millennia
Chicago deep dish pizza to Italy.
That's, yeah, right.
Come on, I draw the line. But on a side note, did you hear Stone suing Miller Coors for their Keystone product? They have a
That's been ongoing for a long time now.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was a It says March 28th.
God damn. Well, that's just like a maybe there's been an update in the story, but it came out about 6 months ago.
Oh, okay.
But again, Greg Koch, like, I mean, I like what he's done for beer. It's just always, it always comes across as self-promoting.
Yeah.
Everything. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's a.
That's the game these days, though, right?
Do you have a beer called Arrogant Bastards?
I know.
But it's like that with a lot of those breweries. It's just like Firestone Walker is another one. Just like they're just.
Firestone Walker is not that. Firestone Walker is. They have like, I would say, arguably the best brewer in the world, Matt Brynjolfsson.
Yeah.
And they barely even use him to, like, you know what I mean? Like,
But it's all image for everything. Like, it's all image and marketing no matter what, and whether you're arrogant about it. Yeah, I just mean
they do a different job of it. They're classy. They work really hard on the beer.
Really, really, really hard.
Yeah, so just a different...
I'm not comparing them to being dicks. I'm just comparing them to, like, it's... You're also in, like, a pretty aggressive game, and they're a company, too, that comes in aggressive with the things they're doing as well.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Ed, do you have something you want to talk about?
I sure do.
Oh, good.
So, some of you may know, well, pretty much everyone in Canada must know by now, Collective Arts.
I did not know this.
They're pretty much, they've probably got more stuff on
the show. I've heard of Collective Arts.
They're taking over the world now, man.
They really are.
They're doing great.
Ridiculous amounts of beer on the shelf from them. But they're opening a facility in Brooklyn. It's going to be a 16,000 square foot facility with a brew house, a craft distillery, 24-tap, two-level tap room, 100-seat casual restaurant, and 40-seat cocktail lounge.
Cool.
That's pretty huge.
Yeah, that's insane.
And a live music venue thrown in there, too.
That goes along with their model.
Yeah, and then they don't know where it's going to open, but they got a 15-year lease on the property. It's pretty cool for a Canadian brewery to open.
It's kind of funny.
Truck has one, right?
But remember a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about that article that talked about like the Brooklynification of out of the world. Yeah. So it's really funny that like a Canadian craft brewery that's like modeled on the Brooklyn model is coming to Brooklyn to open.
Yeah, that's true.
I hope they do well.
They were deep rooted in the state, especially in the East Coast in the States. Are they? Very, very much so. That was like the easiest area for them to spread when they were younger. They didn't have to do cheaper flying. But they definitely were like, when I was in Boston too, even before a lot of it came out here, like a lot of like really awesome stuff of theirs was on the shelves. And
In the States.
In the States. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Even just like worldwide, they've just done an amazing job of working with other breweries and putting the right products out in the right markets, and they've really just done an amazing job with their artwork alone. Just like they don't have to hire marketing people. They probably have to hire marketing people, but I mean they're supporting a secondary group of people in doing so. So
yeah, and the music and everything mixed.
You can almost look at that too as that any artwork on the can now is supporting a secondary group of person because, you know, a lot of people are going to school for marketing and design and they're finding a home in the beer world for much. So,
Okay.
Cool.
We'll wrap this up.
Oh, yeah.
And when we come back, we'll be talking about blank in beer. It's a beer ingredient. Mm-hmm. Over the quick break, we'll allow you to guess in your heads. Mm-hmm. It's a non-traditional brewing ingredient.
Yeah.
That's another hint I'll give.
Non-traditional. Well, in maybe one part of the world, it's traditional.
Yeah, okay. We'll see you soon. Okay, welcome back to the third runnings. This is what we call beers.
It used to be three beers and it's definitely stopped.
Now it's five.
Now it's usually five now.
So this week, instead of a style or a brewery, we've chosen an ingredient, and the ingredient is
salt.
Salt. So salt is not a normal ingredient in beer, but it is famous in one specific style, which is Gose from the city of Goslar in Germany. Sour, salty, historic style of beer that almost died out because of the craft brewing movement. It kind of like made a resurgence. So we're going to start off with a couple of Goses just because they're probably the most famous example of a beer with salt added. Yeah. So, you picked this up for me. Thank you, Brian. Although the six-pack was one can light. So what have we got here?
We've got a Margarita Goza from Spectrum Brewing Company Spectrum Beer Co. out of Vancouver.
Yeah,
so I think you mean Craft Collective.
Craft Collective Beer, whatever they want to call them.
Anyway,
Collective Beer Works.
I wanted to try this because I saw it had just been released, and I'm a big sucker for Gozas. So, in spite of what Ed says,
What's wrong?
He said something about Ghosts being the worst part about craft beer or something.
No, I didn't say that.
Okay. You said, I think Ed said wrote an article about that.
There's an article I read online. There's a few people that just hate them. I love them, but
yeah. I love salt and beer. I think it's awesome.
Well, it smells like a margarita.
Well, you know,
it
sure does. And you know the reason why salt is what the in food and actually in beer too, what the reasoning behind using salt is, right?
I think I know, but go ahead.
It enhances flavors.
It
grips on to flavors, and it, so when I always tell chefs that, you know, when they're cooking with certain things, like when we're caramelizing onions, I'm like, did you put salt in there? They're like, well, no, I want it to be sweet. I'm like, yeah, but the salt will actually enhance the sweetness of that and grip onto the flavor of the sweetness.
That's what I had read today, that salt does a good job of enhancing both sourness and sweetness, not taking them away, enhancing them slightly, and making them less one-dimensional, like rounding them out. But it does suppress bitterness.
It does.
Yeah. So those are the main roles of salt in cooking, other than just seasoning. This beer.
It's very sweet.
Yeah, like it's lightly tart.
It tastes like a margarita.
It tastes like a margarita.
Are you sure this isn't a canned margarita?
Yeah. Well, the big reveal. Isn't there a Budweiser?
Limeritas. Yeah. And berry-aritas now.
I mean, I don't mind the lime flavor in this, though.
I don't hate this. I probably wouldn't buy a lot of this, but I can see, you know, if you're sitting on a hot day on the beach, and I would definitely probably want to have a six pack of this.
They're aiming at the crap, like the. You know, like
the craft beer for the people who don't like craft beer.
What's that beer that everyone loves? Not like Palm Bay. Well, it's that kind of crowd, Palm Bay. And
Hayalls.
Hayalls. Yeah. It's that crowd that goes.
Although, I mean, I've thought about this. I made a beer like this a long time ago too.
Did you?
Yeah, I mean, like it's an obvious one because a margarita's got sweetness, sourness, and salt. And it hits citrus, salt. So why not make a gosa?
It still tastes like beer. It almost has that breadiness at the end, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does. There's a little bit of malt. That's that kettle sour malt flavor I get sometimes, which this one's got it in a nice light amount. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get it too much in some kettle sours, but...
I mean, for what they're advertising, and it doesn't really fall flat. I mean, this is also a very fresh product.
Yeah.
It does. The flavor does not fall flat, and it doesn't also really punch you in the face. Yeah.
But I think the salt in this one is doing a good job. I don't think it tastes too sweet or too sour or any of those things. It's kind of right down the middle of it.
Yeah.
It is quite round. The sweetness tapers off. The lime and the... They didn't say chili, right? They just said lime.
I think it's just... Yeast. Oh, sorry. Well, of course. Yeast. Lime puree, salt, and Belgian candied sugar.
Oh.
It should be candy sugar.
Yeah.
Typo, but... I don't know. That's weird because the Belgian candy sugar, I would assume it would ferment out. So, but I think I saw online that they posted that's supposed to mimic the simple syrup that's in a margarita. But,
okay.
But in a beer, that should ferment out. But
right.
Who knows?
Hmm.
Unless they added it before canning or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So this style goes back to the city of Goslar. The rumors were that the city had, and it still does have, it has slightly salty water in the river. That's the source of their fresh water. It does have fairly elevated levels of salt, but it doesn't taste that salty.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just reading that maybe some of the brewers were adding salt to make their beers a little bit even more unique because they're picking up off the saltiness.
It's a careful balance, but yeah, I mean,
cheeky.
A little bit more, depending on the salt you're using, would definitely help grab some flavors out of a lot of different aspects of
beer. Well, they were making tangy beer, right? Mm-hmm. And tangy beer and salt go well together. I actually like to put a hint of salt in a lot of my sours. Not much. You would never know it's there, but it just helps punch flavor up a little bit.
It does. There's a brewery out of Ontario called Half Hours on Earth.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff I had for them a couple of years ago, they had a very good roundness of salt character in their farmhouse that they were doing. Yeah. And it really enhances flavors really, really well. And they really grasp that technique well.
Sorry, what were you
saying? Well, gosas have been around before the purity law then? I can't remember how to say it.
Reinheitsgebot.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Would they be before, or is it just like that the salt is passive? That's allowable? Or?
I think because it was technically in the water.
Yeah.
And so water is an allowable ingredient. Also,
someone adding it.
That Ryan Heitzke about, I've read about it and stuff. Like, it's really complicated. Like, it was a government measure from Bavaria.
Yeah.
And, like, Germany until quite recently was a collection of, like, autonomous states.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't like being told what, Leipzig's in the north. And they didn't like to be told... Like, they didn't like to see the government down in Bavaria telling them what to do. So, like, I mean, up in Berlin, they were making, like, you know, sour
pastry
beer.
Stouts.
You know? Yeah. But, yeah. It's a very complicated thing. It was, like, it was mostly political.
Right.
Now we like to look back on it. That's why German beer is so good, because it was so pure. It's like, well, this is a political maneuver designed to make sure that Bavaria was the seat of brewing.
Okay.
Right? But I think this would still adhere because their water was slightly salty. So.
Right, right.
Which is funny because, I mean, to a point, salt can kill the yeast.
Yes. So too much salt is a big detriment to yeast health.
Sugar too, but salt is going to be a bit deadlier of a ingredient.
Pretty good for killing slugs too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Slugs are so cute though.
Saw some dead slugs tonight on our walk. Ed's brought a beer. What'd you bring us?
I bought a Saltwater Cowboy Tequila Barrel Aged Gozer from, okay, I'm going to try, Tatamagouche Brewing Co. in Tatamagouche, Nova Scotia.
Tatamagouche. Yeah,
this is kind
of. You did pretty well on that first try at Tatamagouche.
Right?
Yeah.
Actually, this is my second home, is there, my holiday home.
Oh, yes.
I go there
yes.
all the time. That's how I got this beer. This was kindly donated by our friend Stephen, who dropped me a whole bunch of beer off the other day, unexpectedly.
Was a dope haul. That was.
Yeah.
So this is the kind of one I've been like playing around in my head for a while to tequila barrel aged Gosa, because that seems like a slightly better use of the margarita flavor profile, maybe?
Yeah.
Well, tequila agave has that natural salty.
It's got a funky nose on it.
Oh, it does, yeah.
Every time even if it's not a Gosa and I see tequila barrel in it, I always get that like little salty agave.
Wow, it's quite muted.
Yeah, the palate is.
It is, compared to the last one we just had. Well, there's no limes in this one, right? It's just tequila barrel aged.
I wonder how long it's...
I'm trying to find if there's a date on it.
Okay. Can probably tell.
It's kind of creamy.
Yeah, that's what... might be... I'm surprised. Barrel aging a ghost is tough. And this doesn't...
Yeah.
This doesn't smell like there's that much Brett in it. And so barrel aging a ghost without... Barrel aging anything without Brett is a little bit of a risky endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
Just because Brett is the one that can scavenge oxygen that's coming in through the staves. I must say, and this is another example, I'm not a big fan of tequila barrel-aged beers. Have you had many good ones?
Mm-hmm. Not many good
ones. I've had a couple of good ones.
Most of them
obviously, Pequeño Cabo being...
Yeah.
And the thing with Pequeño Cabo is when it's older in the bottle, it's better, in my opinion.
But you get less tequila. You get longer.
Well, no. I got more tequila when we opened it last time, yeah. Hmm. I got almost none. It was really harsh when I opened it fresh.
Hmm.
But I've had other tequila barrel-aged ones that have been quite nice. I just can't pinpoint.
One's got a little bit of... The thing I don't like about tequila barrel-aged sours, I pick up like a weird like cucumber rind type thing off of them that can be pleasant.
Like that bitterness?
Yeah, but not...
Mm.
Like a weird greenness like that. Mm-hmm. That I... this doesn't have that much of it, though. But I don't know. I compared to like other barrel aging, I just haven't found that like tequila barrels are really giving that much to beer. Whereas like bourbon barrel, slam dunk, wine barrels, you know.
Well, I find if you use not in a Gosa fashion and it's actually like, because tequila has that saltiness. So if you're adding, if you're using that as your base to add your saltiness, like to a Berliner Weiss or to a farmhouse ale, you are getting a salt content coming through by not adding salt.
Yeah.
And that's why I kind of really like tequila barrel-aged beers when they're done, right?
So I think the other thing is this is a 4.5% beer that was barrel-aged. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think it feels like it's gone like a little bit stale or something, right? It's
possible, yeah. Our friend of the show, Richie, loves anything tequila barrel-aged because he's half Mexican. Mm. It's his thing. So he's always getting me to like pick up, for some reason, he's works in a liquor store, but always gets me to pick up beers from liquor stores for him because he doesn't know how to go to other liquor stores.
God bless his heart, really.
Yeah.
It's the whole thing. I picked him up when I was in the States, a tequila barrel-aged version of The Abyss.
Okay.
We split that, and it just tasted like a regular Abyss. It was like a $45 bottle.
Wow.
And it was like,
It's a tough one, man.
Especially in Imperial Stout. Yeah, how's it going to take that flavor on it?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, like in a farmhouse or something that has a bit lighter of a flavor, you're going to get a bit more tequila coming out of it. But
yeah. She had one on Sunday, a tequila barrel aged pale sour from Parallel 49. Same kind of thing. It was a nice enough beer, but I just didn't get that much kind of agave or anything off it.
I think it's a very delicate flavor.
Yeah,
it is.
And so in beer, like beer is pretty punchy, especially like the kinds of beers that you want to barrel age, right? Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know.
That's why everyone goes for like bourbon barrels because it's such a big, bold flavor.
Yeah, no spice in them, and yeah, it's really delicate with tequila barrels. And I mean, it's not as long as you're pouring tequila in the barrel, then you're fine. But
yeah, well, that's it. I wonder if you're just better off pouring tequila into the beer.
I've heard of hijinks like that.
Yeah.
In the States, some people have been topping stuff up. Apparently,
making slushies, right?
Oh, yeah. But I've heard of that one.
Yeah. I do. Like, well, we'll see. Anyway,
it's that trouble.
We're gonna kind of like shift focus here, I think, because the one way we talked about it, like Gosa, it's a historical beer style with salt in it or with salty water. But we're gonna shift focus because the other main application of salt in beer is with stouts.
Yep.
It works really well in stouts because, like we were saying before, it balances some of the bitterness. So some of the bitterness that's in the roast malt and in the stout base recipe is, you know, balanced by the salt. It also brings out more malt flavor. Like it enhances the malty flavor of the beer. So I think, yeah, like salt in stout is can be a fantastic addition if done
brininess and stout.
Yeah, too. And that's where the whole we were talking about that a couple weeks or a month ago, but the oyster stout thing comes from. It's the salinity of the oyster that's helping the beer, not the actual flavor of the oyster.
And this is one we meant to do for the stout one, but we didn't get it, and
that's why I brought it tonight.
Mm-hmm. And this is like a whole thing now as well, putting kelp and stuff. Like Phillips has a new one out of Gozo. I couldn't find it, but it's made from like a local rockweed variety.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So yeah, a seaweed. Yeah,
I haven't seen it anywhere either. It's pretty brand new.
I heard Friday. I talked to someone today and I said Friday. So.
And then there's the chocolate oyster out from
Salt Spring.
Spinnaker's has their oyster one.
Yeah.
When I first came to town, Spinnaker's. And I think they had it, like, go bad on them.
I think we skipped past the name of our beer. This is the Kelp Stout from Tofino Brewing.
Yes.
and they've added pretty prolific.
Yeah, people can't see what we're doing.
Yeah, and they've added kelp because I think they're looking for that salty, briny character in the beer.
It's also bull kelp coming up on Tofino is, like, a thing. So they're basically gathering something from the shores themselves. It's almost a free ingredient for them to get. Is basically what they're building upon.
Seasider puts kelp in one of their
I didn't know that.
I'm not Seasider, Good God. The Seaside Gin from
Sheringham.
That's a gorgeous gin. And they just pick it off the shores there. What's confusing about this beer to me, it's a kelp stout, but it has a picture of an octopus on the front of it.
It's a gorgeous picture of an octopus.
It is. It's very well written.
This actually, this is a famous picture of an octopus that I don't know if they say on here or not. It's in a lot of other like publications. This actual octopus picture. It's quite.
Is it like
it's
from like a taxonomy
kind of? From like it's from an art thing. Years and years and decades and upon like you know turn of the century in the 1900s and stuff like that. So.
Quick little plug, if you want to see the pictures of the beers we're drinking, go to our Instagram. We post them. They'll be in our story as we drink them.
Mm-hmm.
And next day, we'll post them all when we post the link to the show. Mashing in. There you go.
On
follow
Instagram. But this kelp stout too, like for a BC product, is probably one of the most well-known products throughout BC.
Really?
I think
first
so.
First out, yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant just in general.
First out.
Okay.
So, I remember when I first came to Victoria too, Spinnaker's, I think they had one of their stouts go off, and they marketed it as a dark oyster sour.
Okay.
And I got it in like one of the sour flights, and I really enjoyed it. It was quite good actually. But nonetheless, they went back to the oyster stout the next year, and that beer never resurfaced. So,
well then.
Anyway, so
you should just leave a few glasses out for Brian for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He will happily pay.
I will pay
double plus value.
Yeah, you know, it's like Ed buying every other random beer on the market.
Come on. I need to buy the good stuff.
Don't lie to me, boy.
What? I'm not going to name any names. But one bad beer you hated one time.
God damn it. It's okay. I go to Vancouver, too, and buy the beers off the shelves. I buy the beers from the breweries that are on the shelves here, so it's fine.
But it feels special because you're in Vancouver.
I'm at the brewery, and I feel like I'm supporting the breweries.
You are.
It's not a bad thing. Because they're making retail off it, not wholesale.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're helping them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Brian just doing his part.
Just trying to be an avid member of this community.
He's a goddamn hero.
I'm not a hero. I'm what we know as a POS.
No, I don't want to say not all heroes wear capes.
Not all heroes wear capes. Yeah. Some wear douchebag hoodies and hats.
Some wear beer swag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, this beer is still really good.
It's a great entry level stout, I think. Like someone who, you know, doesn't know that much about craft beer, this is a great first stout to give them. I remember when I used to work at, I worked at the liquor store briefly, and I'd be like, oh, I'm looking for a stout, and I'd always suggest this one. They're like, ew, but like kelp. I'm like, it doesn't taste like kelp. Like, it's just a hint of salt. Like, yeah. What?
It's quite low, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one, I mean, it's probably more, I would say more flavorful than a lot of equivalent stouts of the same percentage.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't fall into the dry stout category either, so it has a bit more sweetness to it.
For after.
Mm.
Fair enough. I actually really like this one. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I can see.
I remember being one of the very first craft beer, like quote unquote craft beers I like had when I was started really going to the store to buy beers. I remember this one being, and the label grabbed my eye, but I was like, oh, kelp stout, cool. And it sort of like always stuck in me as like one of my very first sort of entry level beers.
Okay, we've got, is it two more stouts?
Two more stouts, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
This one's not really salt per se.
It says salt right on the label.
It's salted caramel.
Does it?
Caramel.
Caramel?
No, it's caramel.
Yeah, I guess so, but still, there's salt in there. Yeah, I know.
I'm just kidding.
It's also got your favorite ingredient.
What?
Lactose.
Oh, God.
It's your favorite. It's milk stout.
Oh, I don't mind them that much. I'm just, I'm less of a fan of just shoehorning lactose into everything.
Lactose, caramel malt, high quality Valheroni. I don't know what the hell that is. Cocoa nibs provide chocolate caramel sweet backbone. Blah 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 blah.
So what's the beer?
This is coming from Wild Beer Co.
Wild Beer Co. From my homeland.
Oh yeah.
It's about 50 miles from my dad.
I didn't know they were Australian.
Well, 50 miles, that's the whole country of Australia.
I was planning to go visit these guys. No tasting room.
Yeah.
No tasting room.
These guys have been making beer
distributed worldwide. Really good beers, man.
Like, oh, okay. They do
We got these when I was in Korea, we got their beers in Korea.
Oh, really?
On draft and in bottles.
I believe it.
They are literally in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
They're in like a tiny little village.
They've done a good job of getting the beer around.
Yeah,
they've done a good job of keeping the quality up too.
They do have a tasting room in Bristol, but it's a bar. We'll make it out there, but yeah, it does actually have sea salt, isn't it? It says salted caramel.
But
it has caramel malt and then sea salt. So they're just being a bit tricky.
Oh, that's the flavor.
That's the flavor.
They're being a little fun with the name of it.
I do like these guys. They've got another one that I was thinking about picking up. They're Sleeping Lemons, I think. It's like a lemon and sea salt sour. Very nice.
Yeah,
I've had that, and
this is quite sweet.
Really, quite brilliant of a sour.
Yeah, it's good.
This is quite sweet. Like,
yeah, I remember.
It's quite light too. Like the percentage is low. Like normally when I drink these kind of like adjunct stouts, they're normally like in the 8 to 9%, and this one's only at what,
4.5? Yeah.
Yeah. That's so
crazy.
Quite low for an adjunct stout.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a pint of this at Smith's. And it was it got a little hard to get
To the end of the pint. As soon as you said pint of this, I was like, oh, yeah, man, like, this is about the right amount.
It's definitely a sipper.
Yeah.
For a 4.7% too, like, yeah, I could not drink a lot of this.
It's very creamy and salty. Yeah. And some things are coming to mind that I probably shouldn't say.
That's fine.
I don't know. God. Not my mind, anyway.
It's nice, though.
Yeah. Mm. It's nice,
it's very desserty.
Yeah, exactly. I think you have to drink this beer with sweet food, because the sweet food will help cancel out the sweetness of the beer, and they'll both taste better.
Yeah,
but yeah, this needs a brownie or something. It's just
You could go lamb with this, and lamb would bring that Barney intenseness and really take down some of that caramel and
too. So those are the two main pairings for stouts. It's either desserts or intense game meat.
Deep, ready meat. Duck might do it, but like we do cacao, cacao nib and duck at work, and it holds up, but the cacao nib is just more delicate.
What about a nice bit of pheasant?
Bit of pheasant, yeah.
You never see pheasant around here.
Pheasant or quail would be really delicious with it. I watched
I've never had that.
I've had a really chef good.
We got plenty of squab around here, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Not the same kind of squab. Squab would work, too. Quail would work better, like pumpernickel, celery, chocolate, or this would be delicious.
Used to get pheasant when I was a kid, and you would be eating it, and you'd be like... Like a little bit of a shot.
Little
like,
buck shots.
Oh, really?
That's super classic.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
It's my memories of it. Good, though. It's really tasty.
Mm-hmm. What is it? So it's like a gamey chicken.
It's incredible.
Yeah. It's a smaller chicken. It's in that family.
It's very gamey, though.
Okay.
Because you usually hang them for a while as well, right?
Curing? Or
curing. Yeah, okay.
No, you just hang them, you bleed them, dry them out. They just have they're just a lighter. They're not as dark as quail, but they're bigger than quail, not as large as chicken. But they got still a little bit more deep color to them. We have pheasant on the restaurant right now. We have a pheasant duck and pork rillette we're doing on our meat board right now. We've got pheasant kicking around too, I think, that we were gonna do something with again. But
that's cool.
Love rillette.
Yeah, and I like that we have a gentleman working for us from House Sausage right now, who's been doing a lot of our sausage and rillettes for us too, and he's just been
one? Shane or Kyle?
Kyle's working for us.
Oh, really?
2 days a week now. Cool. Yeah, he's the shining light on our team right now. He just works
so hard.
He's
a beast in the kitchen. Right?
He's great. He's just like super happy to be there all the time. And I've got a whole bunch of projects I can give him, and it gives him a little bit extra money in his pocket and stuff like that. And I don't work him to the bone. And
just so you know, I'm going to send you photos of everything I eat in the UK, and you're going to be just disgusted.
I'm probably going to be very happy because I love English food. I think it's one of my favorite styles of cuisine. Oh, yeah.
I mean, fish and chips is just... I can't wait to have some good fish and chips.
You got a local bangers. Chippy?
I'm not a huge potato fan, but when it comes down to eating potatoes in England, I'm very happy to have potatoes in England.
We're going
to
get some good curry, too, because... Mm-hmm.
Always one thing to know,
kebabs too. I'm not a good kebab.
You might want to come to this too. The weekend before the El Sauvage dinner, we're doing our traditional or our family style meals that we do on every Sunday nights. And my good friend Rob Ratcliffe, who's born just outside of Edinburgh, is coming to do an all English family style meal. Basically, English roast family meal.
Oh,
so we're gonna do
that. Is tempting.
Yeah,
but
$30 a head.
For both of those things.
Yeah.
Damn.
So we're going to be doing... And I'm really excited and it's for his potatoes, and he's got a beautifully Yorkie recipe. So
I make good... I'm from Yorkshire, so...
Yeah.
I actually make very good Yorkshire puddings.
You should. If you would like to come and have some...
In the blood.
Maybe we can work a special guest deal for you to come and have some... Just to give you... Just prepare you for your trip.
I'll send you all the pictures of the food from Belgium, too, because I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I love European food.
All the waffles.
Yeah. All the waffles and the moules frites and stuff.
Well, the moules frites, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of my favorite dishes.
It's fantastic. Yeah. So good.
Let's open this last one.
Let's go.
Because I've got whiny kids, so I got to wrap this up. They're not that... I don't mean they're whiny all the time. I just mean they're a little bit whiny right now.
They don't seem that bad.
No, I just mean that they're getting a little antsy right now. Yeah. They're like, when are they going to leave? And I'm like, 5 minutes, maybe. I don't know.
Drink up.
So we have one more beer. Thank you for bringing this. This looks fantastic.
This comes to us in recommendation from our good friends over at the Cook Street Liquor Store. Dave has been putting in an amazing program there for almost 8-9 years now, I think. And yeah, so when I talked to him about salted beers, he said this has... Now, this is quite unique. This is Collective Arts. They did 6-series Imperial Stouts this winter.
So what are we? We're a shill for Collective Arts now?
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, right?
They just, they have, every time we're doing a style, they've got something that's worthwhile
to
grab.
I know, I know. Yeah. So this it's is true. And this is Collective Arts' Origin of Darkness, right?
Yeah, and they did 6 different stouts with 6 different breweries.
And a porter, too.
And a porter.
But the porter's the one that's in like a like a paper case. Type mm-hmm. thing,
it comes
right?
with a poster. It
comes in a sleeve, like you would get a you get a scotch.
So beer makers are the new musicians, right?
Yeah.
You need to have the album art and the poster on your wall, all right?
Oh, God knows people aren't buying those.
Oh, this smells fantastic. So this is the... They're all bourbon barrel aged stouts, but this one's got, it says vanilla, Icelandic sea salt, and Om Nom Cocoa.
And so Kex Brewing is out of Iceland.
Okay. So that's why it's Icelandic sea salt.
Yeah.
So I did hear, my wife tells me that, there is terroir in salt, which obviously maybe you would know a little bit about. Mm. But so, because you can't, my wife's Korean, and you can't make kimchi with salt from here. You just can't. The minerality's wrong.
Yeah, it doesn't turn out the same as it would back.
And so I guess there would be a terroir to the salt from Iceland.
Mm-hmm. My only problem with this series is that the mission is to infuse terroir into the beers. But isn't terroir something that should be introduced passively?
Yeah, it's not.
Isn't that the entire definition of it, right?
Yeah, it does. I mean,
it's the lay of the land.
I know what they mean. I think they're trying to infuse the terroir of the brewery they're collaborating with.
Mm-hmm. Right,
that's just a big mouthful.
Yeah,
right.
I guess so.
If we're going to collaborate with these guys from Iceland, let's use 3 Icelandic ingredients.
Yeah,
right.
And I remember this beer being very, very, very well done, and it has not disappointed again. Opening this.
No, I would say though that
the salt's not.
I'm not getting a lot of either the vanilla or the vanilla just from the bourbon itself.
Yeah.
It's mostly just cocoa and mm-hmm. imperial stout, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Although the salt...
Yeah. I'm sure when I first had this beer, I did get the salt content through, and it was really nice. I think maybe just while it opens up maybe a bit more, you might get some...
I've enjoyed everything I've had from this series, mm-hmm. except for the truffle one.
Yeah, me too. I couldn't handle that black truffle one.
I enjoyed the truffle one.
It smelled like a jar of truffle oil.
It smelled like soy sauce. Oh. It was soy sauce, and it was super umami. It was super earthy. But I could drink another small glass.
I had the white miso one, and I liked really that good. One.
That one's
nice
too.
Yeah, that really helped smooth that beer out a lot.
That was a good one.
Really did well.
Was that the wild beer one?
Yeah,
tying things back together.
Was it? Oh, maybe. I'm not. I forget who collaborated.
Maybe
it had white miso and one other ingredient in it. I forget.
Yeah,
what
I can't remember now. Mm. It was something to do with katsu, but.
All very cool it's cool to see a brewery do that though. It's not like, hey, we're just going to put out 6 imperial stouts with several different adjuncts in it.
Well, the thing I like about it is that for Canada, we're finally here.
Yeah,
this has been going on in the States for 10 years now.
Yeah,
that's true.
We're finally getting to the point where we're seeing these barrel aged imperial stouts come out because mm-hmm. you know. Winos like ourselves need our imperial stuff.
Yeah, we do need them. Yeah, that's important.
No, it's always a shame. You have to go to the States to get these bourbon barrel aged stuffs, but now finally we're getting
good ones. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And Florida. I find it's also just the time that you want to put into it. Some mm-hmm. people like to put a little less time into theirs and say, the character comes out if you just. Let it soak in there for a couple of months or not even.
You can tell right away.
It's the age-old sauce debate. Is it better to boil the sauce down to nothing or let it stew down to nothing? You know what I mean? Is it better for it to go down quick or to go down slow? Is it better for it to just stay in the barrel a couple of...
Wait. With the sauce one, as a non-chef, I don't know which one's right.
Marco Pierre White would say
that
you should boil it down very quickly.
Why would
he? Because he feels that doing the slow method, you're just stewing away everything and everything's dissipating. And
whereas, when you boil something hard, it dissipates quickly.
Well, then the other part of it is when, and this is a lot, this is my old chef in Vancouver, and we did not boil it down that heavily because it destroys the gluten and the collagen in the that you're trying to develop from the bones. So I like to do mine slowly.
So I use the food lab technique in stocks, which is add gelatin.
Yeah.
So I can quickly make a good sauce by adding a little bit of gelatin. Nice. Because what are you doing all day? You're getting gelatin to come out.
I watched I watched a quick little thing on they recreated the Fanny Farmer cookbook in Boston. Mm-hmm. And they used all the traditional techniques from like the 1800s, and they made like traditional gelatins, like molds for dessert. But the only way to you couldn't buy gelatin sheets or gelatin powder, so you had to literally boil calf's heads and like delicious. Calf's feet and stuff like that.
Yeah, I thought it was hooves a lot of the time. Yeah, stuff like that.
That too, and I think they used heads too, but hooves. Like we would bring in veal feet basically to extract most of our collagen and whatnot. So
lovely veal feet.
Yeah. Oh yeah, here we go.
Mm-hmm. Don't want the rest of that veal.
Very tasty.
Don't want the rest of that veal.
New
podcast. Throw that shit out. I just want the feet.
Yeah.
No, but yeah. So
these taste like the feet of a cow that's seen no pasture.
But they're very unworked, and they're basically on muscle. So it's just extracting.
When I was young, there was a mad cow scare from England.
Yeah,
and so like they banned all these like English cookies. Those cookies that have the red center in them?
Yeah.
It's like a cream-filled cookie with like a red jelly. Yeah. It's like an English
They're
cookie.
They're called Jammy Dodgers.
Sure, Jammy Dodgers, whatever. Yes.
Delicious.
They are delicious. And I love it. It was my favorite cookie. And I was like, you know why? Yeah. I used to eat up the edge all around and then leave the center and then go at that later.
Yeah.
But yeah, those were banned for a little while, man.
Yeah.
Like because they did contain gelatin from British cows.
I remember being in... there was a scare in Virginia area. We were doing like a class trip to like Washington D.C. because I lived out east.
Yeah,
and they had special like mats you had to step on before you had to go inside anywhere for all because we were like in some of the pilgrim areas and whatnot where and the preserved and like the farms and like, you had to basically wipe your feet properly on these bacteria killing mats or they had because they were having a big mad cow scare.
Hmm.
Interesting side note, because I grew up in Britain in the 1980s, can't donate blood in Canada.
Mad cow.
We don't want your
case. I have CJD, which is what the human equivalent. Yeah.
Okay.
Kruschel-Yakov disease. I'm probably butchering that.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Well,
it's pretty messed up.
Salt and beer.
Salt and beer. That's
it. I like it too.
I like it too.
What do you think? Salt in all
ghost
my
beers. Ghosts or stouts? Or both.
I like both. I love Gosas. And I think most less because I like salt.
Yeah, I think so too. Me too. I'm a huge fan of salt. In fact, the number one thing to get my cooking to taste better was to add more salt. I wasn't adding enough salt, to, especially like boiling water and all that. So yeah.
Well, at the restaurant, we do a lot of our own charcuterie, a lot of our own fermenting, and a lot of our own curing. So salt plays a big role in what we do at our place.
Yeah.
Gonna start, if I open a shitty beer, pinch of salt.
One thing I read today was that
you never know.
Can you do that?
Back in the early 20th century in the States, people would add salt to their glass to help aid. When you add salt to a beer and then pour a beer into that glass, it aids with foam.
Oh.
You get like a big old head on the beer. So they would add it to their beers.
All you had to do was really just put a little wooden skewer in there.
Interesting.
It's since died out and not a thing, but
Let's bring it back.
Yeah, salt room beer glasses.
Salt room beer glasses, eh? Someone's doing that with something.
I'm sure.
Let's plug our shit.
Okay. Yeah, let's plug our shit.
Stefan first.
Sure. At SexCoverFeet on Instagram and do the brewing and posting for at Il Sauvage Brewing as well.
You can find me at How I Handle My Vices, dots between each word. Find me at Beer Can REV. I haven't posted very much lately due to the fact that I'm also posting for a few other accounts. Courtney Room, I am also aiding in that. You can find me there 7 days a week now. And at our beer dinner on the May 5th. And Ed?
You can find me on Instagram at EdK. Lots of pictures of beer. Bringing Port to Slaughter.com, Bringing Port to Slaughter on Facebook and Instagram, and also work for What Brewing, as well as doing this podcast.
Okay.
Bam.
We're done.
Wrap it up.